You are listening to a sermon by Andrea Parrott, recorded on Sunday, July 8, 2018, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. As Jenna said, my name is Andrea Parrott, and normally on Sundays you'd find me just up the hill a little bit. But today the congregation is off checking another congregation, so I have the Sunday free, so I'm delighted to be here. Not sure if anyone was at worship in the park a couple weeks ago. No, no, that's okay. It was very warm. So, all that to say, when we were there a couple weeks ago, this is a very much cooler and shadier field trip for me on a Sunday than it was a couple weeks ago. So, I was here in October, and if you were at worship in the park, you might remember in those two times when you might have heard me speak before, I did a fairly standard sermon. Don't worry, I'm not going to test you on anything that I said. I'm just bringing it up to say today I'm deviating. I'm shedding my Presbyterian roots a bit, and instead of doing a traditional sermon, I'm heading into this strange territory of testimonial. Maybe it was the Baptist's fault from our worship at Trimble. So I'm going to have a little bit of testimonial mixed in with how the Mennonite Central Committee has actually played a significant role in my own vocation. So it's going to be this multi-denominational message this morning. So let's begin. I chose the ending of John to speak on today, and it's such a great image. Feed my sheep, tend my lambs. Jesus is setting to depart, and so he's giving his disciples, particularly Peter, some last instructions. And it begins with, "Do you love me, Peter? Then feed my sheep." Jesus is saying the way that Peter can continue to love Jesus is through caring for Jesus' lambs, to care for the followers. And by extension, the way that we can continue to love Jesus is by also feeding Jesus' sheep. This story is one that's resonated with me throughout pretty much my whole life. And I think of how throughout my journey, caring for God's children in the world is something that I've always tried to aim to do. Even when I was a teenager and I didn't really understand what vocation was, I remember being committed to being on the lookout for where God had called me to be and who God had called me to serve. So given that, it really shouldn't have been a surprise to myself when, during my first year of university, I changed directions in life to follow a different path that God was leading me on. So originally, way back when I finished high school and started my first year of undergrad, I was committed to going into pharmacy. I wanted to be a pharmacist. But I needed to take some prereq classes first. So I took one that was on nutrition. It was just kind of bundled together with the things that I needed to do. But that nutrition class spurred a feeling in myself that I couldn't shake. One that, for me, to feed God's sheep actually meant for me to feed the poor and the hungry. And so I abandoned my plans to be a pharmacist and switched into dietetics. And so from then on, I committed to living out my calling as a dietitian, specifically to serve the underfed and the underserved throughout the world. During my undergrad, I took classes on population and public health. I skewed my internship placements to focus on serving those in lower socioeconomic classes. I even took a semester off of university to head down to Peru and volunteer in a nutrition rehabilitation center. And then I took it even a step further and spent a summer taking classes on international nutrition, which happened to also take place in South America. In my mind, as I was graduating university, I was well on my way to feeding God's sheep and heading towards this career as a humanitarian missionary. But here's the thing. At the time, I thought that vocation could easily be traced throughout one's life like a fairly direct connect the dot. something that would be brightly colored and easily identified, and a straight path. Sometimes I even catch myself thinking that way now. Except, as many of you know and probably have experienced yourself, our journey is not usually ever a straight line. I actually think it looks more like one of those old family circus cartoons. You know, the ones where Billy, the rambunctious son, would have to go from the neighbor's house to his own house. Instead of having a dotted line that would kind of tick down to the sidewalk, across, and back up to his own house, it went something like out the window, around the doghouse, under the bushes, over the fence, and in through the garage. That is what vocation looks like in my life. It's full of loops and swirls and backtracking. And my journeys looked a lot like Billy's neighborhood adventures. So if you haven't guessed by now, I clearly have not ended up pursuing my career in international nutrition. In fact, I've found myself in this process of learning that feeding God's sheep takes all different forms and shows up in our lives in so many different ways. So the couple of the detours that I've had are fresh out of getting out of university, keen to do this serving, I found myself working for a diabetes research unit that went throughout northern Alberta, working in rural off-reserve communities, doing diabetes screening. And then I took another detour coming out here to the coast, where I led a public nutrition program for children and families across BC. But then, perhaps the biggest detour on my life is ending up in seminary, which is a whole other story that we don't have time to go into now. But I ended up at BST 4 years ago after feeling drawn to combine the physical health, which I knew so well, with the spiritual health. And I saw such a connection and wanted to explore that more and fill up my nutrition and spiritual health toolboxes. So while I was away, just up the road there at BST, learning about the ministry side of things, it seemed like my nutrition dreams were very, very far away. And perhaps I wondered sometimes, did I take a wrong turn in following my calling? Was I feeding the wrong sheep? So where am I going with this? My little detour into testimonial. And what does the Mennonite Central Committee have anything to do with this? Now, if you got a video sent to you or saw it on Facebook or something this week, the spoiler is it has to do with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. So, as I got deeper into the Presbyterian world, I was studying, I started getting asked to join committees because that's what we do with Presbyterians. You join committee after committee. But 2 years ago, I was invited to apply for one of the best committees, I think, and it's our International Service Agency. It's called Presbyterian World Service and Development. My background in nutrition and knowledge of international development were actually really suited to the work of this charity. In October, I will be completed, but hope I get at least 4 more years as serving PWS&D. From my understanding, it's a sister organization to MCC, and I'm pretty sure most of the mainline denominations have some form of this development aid organization. Presbyterian World Service and Development is an organization that is inspired by God's promise of abundant life, and they envision a sustainable, compassionate, and just world. They've been around for over 70 years, through many different iterations and methods of carrying out their work. But these days, PWS&D is mostly just staff in Canada who support partners overseas, who are working on the ground, who are local, who are doing development and sustainability projects, as well as some aid and relief projects. So I'm not going to take time today to go through a full description of PWS&D. I can do that. Please ask me questions. But today, I just want to talk about one of the joys of PWS&D being a smaller organization. And that is, because we're small, we tend to partner up with different alliances and coalitions. So some are on an international scale. There's something called the ACT Alliance, and it has It's throughout the whole world, and it's how we respond to disasters on a large scale. We belong to national committees and alliances, such as the Canadian Council for Refugees. We also do work with Kairos, which is reconciliation-based. And then there's this one tiny little partner you might have heard about. Not tiny, it's big and wonderful. The Canadian Food Grains Bank. And that is our connection. The Canadian Food Grains Bank actually grew out of work that the MCC was doing in the 1970s. So it started as a pilot project in the 70s, and in 1983, four other denominations joined the Mennonites to start the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Presbyterians joined in 93, so you had a few years run up before we figured out how great of work you were doing and that really we needed to add our resources to that. And the director of PWSND will honestly say it's one of the best decisions that our organization has ever made. Canadian Food Grains Bank now has 15 partner denominations. So pretty much you can throw a stone at any church in the area and they will probably be connected somehow to it. And we all take turns leading projects around the world. So I'm not going to assume everyone knows what the Food Grains Bank is, so I'll give a quick refresher. But you might know. In the 70s, and 80s especially, there was a lot of famine going on in the world. And so inspired to try and help share some of the wealth that Canada had, farmers started donating portions of their crops. So they actually were creating grain banks. They would take extra, or maybe, you know, take this plot, and there was a grain elevator that they would fill, and eventually that grain would be shipped to the places that were in dire need of food. These days, while farmers still will donate crops, it's actually the funds from the sales that are sent to where it's needed most. Rather than sending grain itself, which, you know, wheat might not actually even be a local staple in certain areas, and sending large amounts of grain to other places floods the local market and actually hampers local economies. So what we do now is we find our local partner organizations who have food available themselves, or maybe if, you know, a whole area is wiped out, we find somewhere adjacent or quite close, and we give the money to them to pay for food. And that's how the food aid and relief gets taken to the people who need it the most. And of course, it's not just donations from farmers. It's donations from all of us in many ways that helps go towards food assistance. But the Food Grains Bank has actually expanded quite a bit from just providing food aid. That's the part that they want to do the least, right? We're looking more long-term and greater impact. So there's a lot of work being done with agriculture and livelihoods, so sustainable agriculture, environmental things, providing ways for people to have sustainability in their food. We also do projects with nutrition and projects with advocacy. Presbyterian World Service and Development, we're a fairly small organization in the scheme of things, but we currently have projects that are going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan, in Haiti, in Nicaragua, Guatemala, and in Malawi. I looked up on the MCC where you guys have projects going on, and it is extensive. My goodness, this is just a small snippet. There are projects in Colombia, Burkina Faso, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Syria, India, Cambodia, and many, many more. I just wanted to share one story of how this actually looks like on the ground, what it means when we say that we provide aid. So I can only share from the Presbyterian perspective, so I'll do this one, and it's from a couple years ago when Hurricane Matthew came up through the Pacific Ocean. Haiti, which has just been ravaged by so many different disasters. Everyone knows about the earthquake, but Hurricane Matthew was actually, it didn't get much news, but they were pretty devastated there. And so the Presbyterian Church, we have several partners working on the ground in Haiti. So as part of the Canadian Food Grants Bank, we said, yeah, we have people there, we can do this. So we took on as the coordinators of it. And so we sourced grain from other parts of the island, and people who had their crops wiped out were provided with 3 months of food rations. So they had their oil and their, I think it was maize that they got, and the nutrition packets, and they got 3 months. But in that package, they also got seeds, because the idea was we didn't want them to have to live off of rations for the next year. The growing season was still going, and if they planted then, in 3 months, they would have their crops again. So that was the organization that was being done, coordinating from Canada, but the work was being done on the ground. And one of the best things about the Canadian Food Grains Bank is this is how the government of Canada gets a lot of their aid and relief work done. So the Canadian Food Grains Bank gets $25 million a year from the government that matches any funds that we raise. So all these denominations working together, we get a 4-to-1 matching. So we have to raise $5 million, and they actually, we raise $5 million, they give us $20 million. So we have $25 million a year to do food and aid and development throughout the world. So that was just a very short snippet of what the Food Grains Bank is, and I'm happy to talk more about it, but I just wanted to bring it back around to the vocation and feeding sheep. So obviously my idea of vocation looks a little bit different than what I thought it was when I was 18. But I've been delighted to see that the combination of the two biggest parts of my life, of ministry and nutrition, have been able to combine in a way that I never would have expected. Being part of Presbyterian World Service and Development is something that I know God had planned for me years in advance, and I had no idea where I was being led to. And so while I don't find myself out in refugee camps being the one actually feeding people, I do find myself in this very privileged position where I get to share messages with people in Vancouver and in the area, where I get to say the wonderful work that is being done in the name of Christ of feeding all of God's sheep for the ones who need it the most. I also, being part of the committee, I'm just always surprised to see how my experience in international nutrition, the brief foray I had, has really made me, I think I'm a good board member. I hope I'm a good board member. But it's delightful to see how they combine. And I'm excited to say I get to go on a monitoring trip coming up in the fall. So as a board member, they want you to go and actually see what's being done so that you have a better understanding, so that you have really good stories to share when you come back. And so the one that I'm going on is to Malawi, where we do have two food grains bank projects, one that's on sustainable agriculture and one that's on drought mitigation. So that'll be really exciting to see what's going on in the ground. So that's my brief testimonial. I hope that wasn't too painful. I'm still feeding sheep to the best of my abilities, but just seeing how it's taking on many different ways. And I'm so glad that we got to listen to the Isaiah passage today. I find that one, it's very close to my heart. And it was beautiful hearing it read by different voices and having the music built into it. But I just love the image that is painted of abundant life, of the promise of what is lying there for us, not just in the future, but what God is doing here and now. And I think the work that all of these development organizations are doing is providing glimpses of what an abundant life can look like for all people, not just for those with means, but for those who need a bit of extra help. And so, I'm really privileged to be able to share that, to see the transformation that happens with people in countries receiving aid, and the transformations that happen within communities and congregations that are providing resources for that. So that's all I have for you today, but I'm happy. I know we have response time, so I'm happy to talk about vocation, but I'm also happy to talk about the Canadian Food Grains Bank as well. So thank you.